On this episode of The James Quandall Show. The
problem is that because I'm working in my business and on my business, I would rather work on the business, not in the business. But because we're still young and my hand needs to be involved in clients and everything we do, when something like that hits, it's extremely disruptive to my life.
Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Philip Stutz on the podcast. And he's a CEO, founder, and best-selling author, and has worked in corporate and political marketing with multi-billion dollar budgets, and has worked with Fortune 200 companies, presidential candidates. He's been a contributor for ESPN, CBS, CNN, and much, much more. But today, we went and talked about what it's like to be a lost soul and a wantrepreneur, and how ADD can be a superpower. We also covered how business is an intellectual sport and that success in business can come from a desire to compete with yourself. And it doesn't always have to mean you're competing with the other people in your industry. It can just be about becoming the best version of yourself. And we talked about how in 2022, Philip's word for the year is humility and how he's realized the importance of loving himself and how much that will help him grow in his marriage and a parent, and how we shouldn't numb our feelings, and we should learn to feel our feelings. Finally, we cover how you can still love yourself and learn to grow no matter what your age is. There was so much more in this conversation, and I hope it really helps you as you kick off the new year. So, to continue our conversation that we are having, and the listener will appreciate this because this has been an audio-only podcast, and we've been talking about the potential of using some video, and I've had some great guests that have had that use their hands, and they tell a great story, and we're just not using any of that for the podcast right now. And you think that that is a missed opportunity?
It literally can take you 2 minutes to Google Zoom backgrounds. Choose one, and then you can do video. That's as difficult as it would be, James.
Why do I have this tendency of making everything about 10 times more complicated than it needs to be? Yeah. I think it's laziness for me is where it comes from. Mm. And I'm curious, in your book, you talked about being sort of lost, a wandering soul, wantrepreneur type attitude. And I'm curious, what got you out of that? And I'm asking personally for me because I sort of feel that way a lot of times.
Well, I think you have to understand who you are first. And so for me, I am first and foremost, my wife and I were literally having this conversation last night because my daughter's 9 and she's just, there's no competitive bone in her body, right? Like she plays basketball. She's being a goofball the whole time. Like when she does sports, it's just, you know, all this, she has girls in her class that are like bragging that they're making A's on spelling tests. And my daughter's like, I don't know. I don't care. You know, like, and they're like, oh, I'm better than you and all this stuff. And she's like, yeah, it doesn't really register. And I realized this is my wiring. So she's got that from me. I am super competitive with myself, but I have no competitive bone in my body with anybody else. I've never had it. And so the wannapreneur was misguided in the sense of not understanding the game that I needed to play to be competitive with myself. And so what I mean by that is, wannapreneur meant this. I didn't, for 10 years that I ran my business from basically the time I was, well, I'd say 9 years. So basically 30 to 39 years old. I never even knew what a P&L was or a balance sheet. I'd never looked at it. I literally managed my consulting company out of just what was in the bank and then pull out what was for taxes. And that was it. And I didn't, you know, business is an intellectual sport. And the second I figured out that business is an intellectual sport, I became uber competitive with myself to solve, to be great at it and to be the best I can at it. And so part of that is I had to take about 300-400 hours of accounting classes to understand how to read and look at my numbers and understand that that's a strategy document, not a numbers document. And then you make decisions based on those types of what you find in your profit and loss statement, your balance statement, what you see in those numbers that show what you can build upon and what you need to get better at. And I didn't understand that at all until my late 30s. And so I was an entrepreneur understands that we are in the business, and entrepreneurship is an intellectual sport. And that's the best way to put it on a bumper sticker. It's an intellectual sport.
And so you're describing me to a T as far as my, I'm 34.
Okay, good. You're young.
And my competition, it's all internal where I let myself down or someone else down. I could care less about being the most impressive person out of my peers. It's all about beating myself up and being hard on myself.
Well, that's misplaced too, because I used to be super good at that. There's no reason to beat yourself up ever. You need to be positively competitive with yourself. How do you get better? And then celebrate, there's a great book out right now. I think James had Altucher had the author on, but it's The Gap in the Gain. Have you heard of it?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Go read it, because it'll talk about how you need to look at your gains, not your gaps. And if you want to be competitive with yourself, it's a great book to read.
So what does intellectual sport mean then for an entrepreneur? Like, what does that actually mean?
For me, an intellectual sport means a highly competitive environment with myself where there are 10 million businesses out there. And I'm not comparing myself to those businesses, but I want to be the best business, right? And what do I need to do to be the best business? Well, I have to be the smartest at running those businesses. That's why it's an intellectual sport. So it's a highly competitive intellectual opportunity to be the best at what you can be in the field of entrepreneurship. So for me, it's identifying where I'm really good, finding out what gaps I need to close, and continuously growing as a business owner, as a leader, as all of these things. Doesn't mean, James, I don't fail every day. I mean, I fail all the time. I'm really good at failing. But it's, what do I do with that? Do I kick myself and put myself in a place of paralysis that I can't do anything? Or do I say, I recognize that can't happen again, get back on the horse and go at it again? And so an intellectual sport is someone that does all the deep work, the studying, the understanding. It's not just a motivating thing. There's nothing, I used to be motivated by being motivated. Now I'm motivated by looking at the results of what we measure and the measurement systems and processes we have in our company, where I can actually see real numbers and understand what's working, what's not working, and how to improve those things. And then I'm really motivated to take that to the next level.
So if you're not competitive with others, if a business is paying for your lifestyle, how do you continue to compete to want to improve if it's doing enough?
Well, first of all, I get this question, not that question. I get the question I'm about to pose all the time. Hey, who are the biggest competitors in the marketing industry for you? And I literally, the honest answer is, I don't know. I have no idea. I own a huge multiple marketing agencies. And I literally, other than Gary Vaynerchuk, I work with Gary in some regards, on the speaking front, right? So other than Gary, I don't know. Like, I get asked all the time, oh, do you know this Intelligentsia HQ marketing agency? I'm like, who? No. Like, how do you not know them? Like, I don't know anybody. So in a way that shows you, I have no idea I am not we've got to beat these six marketing agencies. We're going to get better than them. How do I do that? I understand this deep in my core. This was identified in a Tony Robbins event, but deep in my core, I am the core value in me more than anything else is growth. Now, it may not be for you, James, but it is for me. Now, everybody needs growth, but is it the driving motivation that gets them through life? So if you look at my marriage, my wife and I are constantly communicating on growth. If you look at me being a father, you know, are you a dad?
No.
Okay. So as a dad, you're always parenting to what your child used to be. Oh my God, I'm still parenting. My daughter's 9. I'm still parenting to her like she's 7 and 8 until she evolves and you go, oh shit. Like she's much older and more mature now. And I gotta recalibrate this. So how am I going to grow into that next role as a dad? It's the same thing. Like I've got 5 or 6 businesses now. I'm invested in over 20 companies. So how am I looking at those and saying, how can I get those better? Like there's a lot on my plate. And so for me, that's very motivating on how I've got to put the systems and processes in place. I have to put everything in place so that I can manage those things and figure out how to get better. And that is, that's a lot of work. And that's what motivates me.
And you have fun with that part of the process.
Unless I get out of the zone of the things I want to do. Yeah.
Does that happen a lot where you're kind of out of that zone or is it not that often?
It has in the last year more than I've wanted it to, but it's moving in a much better direction now.
Do you feel like it's sort of a sprint and then you can rest and then you can sprint again and kind of grow that way, or is it constant?
Yeah, it's a good question. If you sprint and rest and sprint and rest, you're just going to get it's almost like being on a hamster wheel. For me, that's how I look at it.
That makes sense.
What I'm trying to figure out is how do I get more consistent at balance? Mm-hmm. So balance in my personal life and my professional life, where I can put enough systems and processes in place to do all the things I want to do that keep me in line with who I'm supposed to be. My downside is that I'm ADD, and I was one of the first generation of ADD kids diagnosed. I was diagnosed in the 1980s, and there wasn't even HD. There wasn't hyperactivity in the word or in the acronym in the 80s. It was just ADD, no ADHD. And so I can only do the things that I'm super passionate about. And if I'm passionate, then there is no ADD, attention deficit disorder with me. In fact, it's my superpower, but it's also my kryptonite, because I can go so focused on some things that everything else in my world drops off. And my wife is like, hello, you know, I'm over here. You know, oh my God, I'm sorry. I've just been working on this project at work and I cannot do anything but focus on this project at work. That's a sprint. And then, oh yeah. Sorry, let me take a break from that. I'll go spend some time with you and rest. And then I'm back in. And it's a chaotic mindset. And I'm 47 and I've been doing it for 47 years. And what I'm trying to change right now is to actually just create a more balanced lifestyle that I can put more of my time and energy into all the things that light me up and get me excited. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm not maniacally focused on one thing.
So was there something in the last year that you felt was dropping off because of this focused on this one thing business-wise?
No, I mean, in the bad way. I had a little over a year ago, we had half of my entire company leave the company.
Really?
Right before my book came out, or about 5 months before my book came out, all that was the disruption in the labor market actually hit me before it hit everybody else. I thought it was something I did. And I look back on it now, I wasn't quick to adapt to the way the world was changing.
Which is surprising coming from you, because you are seeing these trends before anyone.
Sure, but we all have blind spots. And yeah. So I wasn't seeing the labor market shift so much I was managing to a culture of community at my companies. So the community was, everybody worked together. We all hung out. We cared about each other. Look, in my political ad agency, James, we had people that are woke, liberal, like hate anything that has anything to do with Republican politics. Well, I do mostly Republican politics. I do a lot of Democrat stuff too. But And they were working at our agency happily producing ads for Republican candidates of something they did not believe in, but because they loved the culture and the community of what we built, then they were like, I know it's not what I want to do, but I love everybody here. I like the empowerment you guys give us. And we want, you know, we all hang out together. My best friends, people in my wedding are in this company. Like it was a crazy, crazy community-based culture. And the pandemic blew that up and I was slow to adapt. And what happened was the labor market shifted from a community, you know, where you could build a culture of community to right now, the way that we build our culture and our companies is to serve the purpose of the individual, not the community. And the reason they're not with us anymore, they're working at home, they're working alone. So you better find out what their purpose is, what they want to do, and you better deliver on that. And that's what we're trying to achieve. We've done a lot of, I'll give you some examples of how we've adapted, but I had to go through a lot of pain. I had to scramble to get the company on solid footing. I had to hire new people. We had to onboard them, all that stuff.
Are they all remote now?
Yeah, we're all remote. We have no office. I mean, I'm in an office, but we gave up all the spots in this building except for my one office. And we do have an office in Washington, D.C. that no one has been to since March of 2020. So, and I pay $15,000 a month for that. And I'm not out of that lease until 2023. So fun times. But that's life. We have to serve the purpose of the individual. Ultimately, that's the key to success in this market. So some of the things we've done, first of all, I mean, it is rooted and based in a lot of different things that they want to do. But like we've also instituted a lot of different perks. So one thing we've done is we've said unlimited vacation. Another thing is we pay for everybody's gym membership because they can't come to work anymore and they need to get out of the office and they need to go work. So we fund all of their gym memberships. We also have siphoned off, or I have in the process of creating 2.5% of a profit share in the company, sort of an equity stake. And anybody that works in my company for over 12 months then gets stock shares in the company. And we've carved out a percentage of the business to do that for them. All of a sudden they go, well, they're looking out for my health, my well-being. They trust me on the vacation. I get stock shares in this company if I stay with them for a year. All of a sudden they're like, yeah, why would I job hop? And why, you know, I'm getting hit up on LinkedIn every day by a headhunter. I don't need to do that. No one can match that. Right. We're very competitive on salaries and all that stuff. So we've made a lot of, we've adapted. We're still adapting, but that was what got me into this place of imbalance, is trying to rectify and figure out that problem. And the problem is that because I'm working in my business and on my business, that I would rather work on the business, not in the business. But because we're still young and my hand needs to be involved in you know, clients and everything we do, then when something like that hits, it's extremely disruptive to my life.
I've discovered, whether I'm playing tennis or enjoying a day full of competitive chess, that caffeine and sugar highs just don't last. You instead need something that won't spike your blood sugar and cause a crash. I avoid most pre- and post-workout products because they're full of added sugar, natural flavors, and other ingredients I don't approve of, and they end up making me feel worse than if I hadn't taken them at all. That's why this podcast is brought to you by UCAN. UCAN's products are made differently. Their patented superstarch ingredient has the outstanding ability to provide a steady release of energy without spiking blood sugar levels. Controlling blood sugar is the key to optimizing focus, performance, and recovery. Try UCAN's delicious chocolate peanut butter energy bar, cookies and cream energy and protein powder with 19 grams of protein per serving, or grab the ready-on-the-go Edge pouch. These products will give you the long-lasting benefits of superstarch to balance your blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy for your workout and your day. Because you're a listener of this podcast, you'll get 20% off your entire order by going to UCAN.co/JamesQ. That's ucan.co/JamesQ. Give UCAN a try today.
So my suggestion for anyone listening to this is pick up your book, The Undefeated Marketing System, because when I was done reading that, I said, this is a company I want to go work for, and I have three businesses of my own. I'm like, maybe I should go work here, because you're not making guesses with your work. You're using data and you're using proof. It's not just like walking around in the dark. So you have a really cool mission, and then now you found a way to make even the work culture another level. I think that's really cool. But did that come out of a necessity, or did some of it come from your own loss of balance in your own personal life too?
Did what?
This kind of change in your culture and changing the business model.
No, it came from losing almost half of my employees and going, something has happened in this labor market and I have to solve this problem. And if I can solve it before everybody else, then I'm going to dominate the market. You want to ask me that original question? Why do you call it an intellectual sport? Because I see a gap in the marketplace that other people haven't hit yet, and it's going to hit them with employees, or it's hitting them right now and they are scrambling. They can't figure it out. They can't serve their clients because people are leaving their companies like crazy because they don't want to work under these stupid rules that we've had in business and in workplace for so long. And I found, I had to feel it. I had to go through the pain, but I had a choice. And the intellectual sport is, what are you going to do now that you've seen that this gap in the marketplace exists? Are you going to take advantage of it and dominate the marketplace? Now you're going to dominate the labor market. People are going to come want to work for you. And instead of, like, everybody I know right now is desperately recruiting to new labor. I'm having thousands of resumes sent to me every month, and we get to siphon through that because we are working and trying to solve that problem, and we're doing it before anybody else. That's an intellectual sport. And for me, you know, that arose because I got hit with disruption way before most other people, and I had to make a choice. Either I could sit on my hands and say, well, this isn't right, and those people screwed me and all that stuff, or I could say, how are we going to solve the problem? And then that's, by the way, that's like 14 months of working through that problem, right? So that's not easy. It's not easy. It doesn't happen overnight. But it's important.
So you felt a similar disruption in your personal life, it sounds like, about your own balance.
Well, yeah, man. When you're trying to write a ship that you've invested years of doing your own life, you know, your business, that all of a sudden gets disrupted, then, you know, it's kind of like this. I go to therapy, and my therapist said this to me, which got me on this path during this time. She said, you are extremely self-motivated, right? Competitive with myself. And, you know, you can retire at 65 or 70, and you can have $100 million in your bank account. Easy cash, easy. Like, you know, I see that. I know it. I know how hard you go, and I know how focused you are and all that stuff. But what's the price? What price are you willing to pay? Because if you have the kind of focus to have that kind of money, then everything else is going to fall off. And you can look at a lot of really, really successful and rich people, and they have brokenness all over themselves and other parts of their life. And so you're gonna have to figure out if that's the choice you want to make. And like, that was like a gut punch to me. I was like, oh, no, I want my cake and eat it too. And she's basically saying, no, you get your cake, but you can't eat it, or you can eat, you know, you can eat your vegetables or whatever, but you're gonna, you know, there's a price to pay. And so for me, I had to say, well, I'm gonna right the ship of the problem, of this that's going on in my company. I'm gonna fix it. And then once I fix it, then I'm going to figure out a different way, because money, I want money because I want the lifestyle. I don't care. Like, if you knew, like, I drive a pickup truck. Like, I don't, there's nothing, like, if you told me, Philip, we're going to go on a road trip together, and the first night we're staying at a Motel 6, I'd be like, cool, I don't care. Like, I don't see, like, I don't have toys. I don't buy things ever. My wife's like, you don't buy anything for yourself ever. I go, I can wear the same clothes every day. And I mean, you just don't understand. Like, I don't look at money as things I look at it as freedom, right? So I want money so that I can have great options in life and I can make decisions and not think about money. And so, but maybe I don't need to be a gazillionaire to do that, right? And maybe my relationship with my wife or my daughter or my friends, I'm terrible at friendships, awful. Oh God, I'm the worst at friendships. I'm trying so much harder right now to be a better friend to people because I'm so focused on work, right?
So what does that look like? Do you, you don't respond to messages or you don't reach out? Like, why do you think
People just don't even reach out anymore because I'm unavailable, right? So I am committed over the next 12 months to really put together a better, more balanced life and then have it more ingrained and embedded where I don't have to like think about it. It just is by 2023.
And how are you going to do that? Are you in the early stage of this or have you actually started mapping out what you want?
I've mapped out what I need in my life. I've mapped out, you know, I think my biggest problem, James, is distraction. So that ADD kid, right?
By the way, you're talking about ADD kid.
Yeah.
And you're describing me exactly.
Yeah.
I was diagnosed with ADD as a kid as well. Mm-hmm. I did awful in school, bad grades, never cared. They thought I had a problem of some kind. But then I discovered certain books I loved, and I could sit down and read an entire book in one sitting. This is the kid that couldn't even put together a card house because I got bored in 2 seconds. And once I found what I actually liked, I could spend 8 hours, 9 hours doing it without and not even realize time was flying. So,
It's a flow state, right?
Exactly. And it's only with things I like. If it's something I don't like, I can't focus on it for more than even a second before I get bored.
What do you really like to do right now?
These conversations like this. This is my favorite thing I do. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay the bills at all. And it's just something I love to do.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, man, I get it.
So what's mapping out the personal life? I'm curious because that's really what the show is about. It's it's taking high achievers that and finding how they added balance to their life because it who cares if you're on top of the mountain if your friends and family are gone or your health is gone too?
Well, and I was just saying this. So my kryptonite is distraction, right? So if and I just am one of those people that was taught to never feel anything. And so I struggle with, again, in my therapy session, my therapist literally said, this is in August of 2020. She said, Philip, you've got to feel through your feelings. That was one thing she said to me. And I said, I don't know what that even means. Like, I literally, not like I don't know how to do it. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. Like, that doesn't register and what feel through feel, what does that even mean? Like, that's gobbledygook talk to me. And she's like, yeah, you have to feel, and once you feel things, then you have to work through that. You can't distract yourself. So how did I distract myself? I'm really good at listening to 1,000 podcasts a day. I went to the gym not to work out, but distract my brain away from feeling or thinking about anything that was uncomfortable. I worked, you know, ungodly hours and built businesses because I didn't want to think about how I was feeling or what was worrying me or what, you know, what I was struggling with. I had no time to think about that. And then I would, you know, drink at night. I'm not a big drinker, but I would definitely love to come home and have a couple beers. And that would literally distract my brain away from feeling anything. It's a numbing agent, right? But I'd numb for anything, like numb to go to the gym, numb to do anything. So right now, the things that I've been working through since, you know, basically for the last year is like I unplug and I sit. I live at the beach in Florida and I go sit on the sand with no electronics and I just stare at the ocean for like 20 minutes. And I figure out what I'm feeling and what I'm struggling with and what I feel good about. And I ask myself questions. People probably think I'm an insane human, insane asylum with me on the beach talking to myself, but I'm checking in. And if I have something bad go on in my day, whether it's a fight with my wife or an employee that quits out of nowhere or something that's super stressful, I identify immediately, I cannot numb that at all. I have to sit in it and I have to feel through it. And what happens, James, every time that I've done this is that I don't push that down in my body and then not let it come out. It comes out, I deal with it, and then I move on and saw and work through it. And then I don't stress about it. Within about 24 to 48 hours, that stress is gone. Instead of what I did in the past, which is I just pushed it down, which caused, you know, I have some health issues. And I can guarantee you that not feeling for basically 38 years before I was diagnosed with my, I have an esophageal disease, but that was a huge cause of it. That all that stress of not dealing with how I was feeling, what I was going through, how I was going to solve that, and numbing everything that came in my life from the time I was 8 years old, definitely caused a lot of damage internally into my own body. And so, you know, I get the chance to reverse that in the second half of my life. And that's what I'm trying to do.
That's amazing. And how does it feel like that is helping, the those kind of disconnections on the beach and looking inward? And how's it showing up?
Sure, it shows up in that I love myself, which is something I did not do for 46 and a half years of my life. So I realized if I don't love myself, then how can I really love my wife the way she needs to be loved? How am I gonna love my daughter the way that she, if I don't love me, then it's a fake relationship. Like, it's not real. My relationship with my daughter is an act. My relationship with my wife is an act. And so that was another kind of gut punch when you realize that. And so, shit, I better figure this thing out fast because I better love myself. And I better, you can't just snap your fingers and love yourself. You have to like work at it. And if you ultimately love who you are, flaws, good, bad, all that stuff, then you can love yourself and you're like, oh my God, I can give so much more to my wife and my child. I can actually not try to boss or dictate things to them. I'm a boss at work. I'm not a boss in my house. That's ridiculous. When my daughter is upset, I don't tell her to shove that down like, you know, maybe I felt in my life. She has the right to express why she's upset. Sometimes I screw up and I have to look at my 9-year-old and say, I screwed that up. I'm sorry. And that made you feel crappy. I apologize. Sometimes she's just wrong. And I have to, but I couldn't even recognize that before because the default was, don't be upset. Don't be upset. You're wrong. Don't feel that. Don't feel that. Well, she's allowed to feel. She could be wrong. She could be right. You know, what is that? I wasn't even capable of giving her that because I didn't love myself and I didn't want to deal with her stress because I had, you know, put that was more stress that was going to be added to me. Just a selfish, narcissistic way of living. And ultimately, by loving myself, I can give more to others. I can have more balance in my life. Right. And like we talked about this thing on friendships, like I can actually have friendships again because I actually love who I am. And if people love me, then, you know, like my friends are like, yeah, I love who you are. Then we're good.
This year for you, it feels like you're still in this growth phase of this, of you love yourself. And now what? Like, what's next?
I will be growing and in this growth phase until I'm dead. And I'm not making that up. And it's just that one of those stupid things, like I'll sleep when I'm dead. I hate that stupid thing. Like when I'm 72, I will realize things that I'm doing that I'm like, how could I have lived 72 years and been doing this and all the work I've done and it's still there and I'm going to go work on it because it's my purpose. And so there's like, if I were to tell you how far I am in the journey of figuring it out, I'd say 5%. So I got a 95% to go until I croak. And I'm committed to figuring out. Like, I think the saddest thing I see in the generation of people in their 70s and 80s right now is their fear of dying, their fear, their regret they have in their life for what they didn't do, and now they realize it. And then the inability to change at an age like that. The inability to say, no, I'm just too old, right? And you have to guard against that. You have to fight against that. If you want to have a happy and successful life, you got to be able to learn and grow if you're 82 or if you're 42.
Does that start by having the right people around you, or does it start with some kind of moment that brings you to where you have to do it? Like, what can trigger it?
I don't know. I think it's everybody's got to figure out their own triggers. Like, for me, that's all I can tell you is me. For me, I just had to go through a lot of pain to realize that I didn't want to live in this pain any longer. And here's the thing. The pain of changing is pretty rough, but it's temporary. And the pain of not changing is not as rough. There's a great quote. It's by, I can't ever pronounce this guy's name. It's like Jersey something. And it says, easy choices, hard life. Hard choices, easy life. And that's it on a bumper sticker.
And I think you really can't force it. If it depends on the life that you want. And there's nothing wrong with a life of comfort, of not facing these things. But you'll never be who you could really be if you actually slowed down to ask yourself some questions, some deep questions. And it shouldn't. If it's 70 and you're listening to our conversation, it's not too late.
Well, it's never too late. You mean 90.
Could be 90. You know, my wife worked, her career was as a nursing home administrator. And so she had conversations with people who were successful in life, but had no friends or family that ever came and visited. Mm-hmm. Because there wasn't anybody mm-hmm. left. They either outlived them or they didn't have those relationships because they didn't slow down to kind of, and those people were the loneliest people in that, mm-hmm. that place.
And they're going to die very soon.
And unfortunately, over the last couple of years, a lot of them did die, especially with the increased isolation that we've had.
Yeah.
It is so much easier to just numb your feelings away and not face it and do that again and again and again.
Yeah. By the way, you're about to go through this phase of life in a few years that almost everybody goes through. And it's, you know, they call it the midlife crisis. But basically, the way I describe it is like your whole life, James, you're on like a roller coaster, and you're going up the roller coaster, going up the up, you know, and you're like, life is incredible. It's all like every, you know, I'm working, I'm building, and all I look straight up and it's blue skies and man, this is amazing. And then at a certain point around 39, 40, you kind of crest to the top of the hill and then you look down and you're like, oh shit. Like, half my life is over. Is this all I've got? Is this all I'm going to be? And then you start going downhill.
What do you say if I feel like I've already had that moment multiple times in my life?
You're going to have another one, just FYI. And so for me, you know, it, like, I know people that dealt with that moment by having extramarital affairs, breaking a family up, getting remarried, having a second family. And there's no, look, I mean, people's, they're all acting on their past wiring, and I get that. But there are people that go by Harley Davidsons and act like they're 22 and not 42. For me, I started a bunch of companies and then spent probably 2,000-3,000 hours working on my own psychology. That was my crisis. So it's been an interesting ride.
Well, I think that the world is going to benefit greatly from your introspection, especially when you can document it in a way that we can do it for ourselves. Because I think you have a gift for taking something complicated and making it sound ridiculously simple, that when I read what you write, it's like, duh. That's how I feel when I read your book on the marketing steps or your post on Medium. It's just so simple. And so I think that you have these books on marketing, but how much better of a marketer can you be if you're whole yourself? And we can improve marketers and business people if they can be whole themselves and balanced and love themselves.
I mean, that's how I look at marketing, is how do we serve the customer or client, not how do we win them over or trick them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about how nobody cares about you as the CEO and the money that you're making. They just care about how you're helping them. And that's sometimes hard because your business, you love your business. That's what you care about sometimes. Mm-hmm. So
totally.
Yeah. Well, this is great. And I know we could continue to dive deeper, and I would love for us to continue to speak, and I'd love to be a part of the journey of self-discovery that you're having, because you're just in it right now, and you're so humble, and I don't know, you make it sound easy, but I know this hasn't been easy for you.
No, you said a good word, and my word for 2021 was humble. Not that I was arrogant before, but I definitely thought over the last 6-7 years of my entrepreneurial journey, because it's gone so successfully, that I had a lot of things licked, and that it wasn't arrogance, but it was it wasn't an attractive quality either. And I think through everything I've gone through over the last 15 months, I think the rest of my life, humbleness is what I feel. It is what I am. And things can come and kick you in the ass any day. And if you think you've got anything licked, you're an arrogant, you're arrogant and ignorant. And so I take things one day at a time, and I try my best to grow and to get a little bit better every day. And that's how I guess I look at it.
So I've got one more question for you on that, and then I'm going to give you a chance to let us know where we can find out more about you and tell us what you're working on and how we can support you before we wrap up. But do you feel like you have to kind of reach the top in a way before you can really realize that that wasn't what was going to bring you purpose, and then you start self-reflection? Or can you start to figure that out before you really reach like success?
Yeah, I mean, I think in April of 2021, I had that realization that I needed the mountaintop. I can still get to the mountaintop, or whatever that is, right? But it can't be in the same way I was doing it in the past. So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And again, even if I hit some kind of mountaintop, I'm always going to be challenged by the next. Like, what, you know, my wife's like, oh, please, you sell your business. And if you were to sell your business and we were to be, you know, financially set for the rest of our lives, you turn around the next day and say, I have 6 new projects I'm going to be working on. Like, and I'm like, yeah, I actually, that's exactly what it is. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I think that does answer my question. And so where can we learn more about you, and what are you working on that we can support you with right now?
Yeah, thanks. PhilipStutz.com is basically everything. You can subscribe to my marketing blog, and I have my podcast, the Undefeated Marketing Podcast. We've had some insane guests like Peter Diamandis, who is Elon Musk's business partner, founder of the XPRIZE. We've had the great James Altucher on there. We've had Jay Abraham, John Assaraf is a multiple New York Times bestseller. The other day we had Ken Davenport, who's won 2 Tony Awards as a producer on Broadway. I'm really excited about it. And we get a lot of free content and a lot of interesting conversations. It's called the Undefeated Marketing System, or the Undefeated Marketing Podcast. There is a lot of marketing talk, but there's also a lot of life talk in there as well, which you probably appreciate. And then, I have winbigmedia.com is our marketing agency, and you can go there and look us up.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you coming on to the show today and chatting with me. And I just, I'm praying for your journey, and
thanks,
that you continue to share this, because it helped me today, and I know it will help others as well.
Well, good luck with all your stuff too. Love watching your journey from afar and listening to you on James Altucher's podcast. As well.
Yeah, we're having fun. Thank you.
Good, man. All right, brother.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The James Kwandall Show. The show notes for this episode and other goodies can be found at kwandall.com. Are you enjoying the show? If you are, please subscribe and leave a review. I may end up reading your review live on the next episode. Subscribing, leaving a review, and telling your friends about the show is the best way to support me and help the show grow. See you next time.